Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host, founder, and executive director of Tell Us Something. The next Tell Us Something event is October 7th. The theme is Walk on the Wild Side. You can learn about how to pitch your story and get tickets at tellussomething.org. This week on the podcast.
He walks up and he's got this completely unredeemable action adventure movie. And I pull up his account and it's just bad movie choices and $50 in late fees. And he tries to introduce himself again. And I was like, listen, buddy, you have terrible taste in movies. You owe $50. You're going to need to pay us $20 of those late fees. Take your crappy movie and kick rocks.
And so I run around to the back where the nesting area is while she's eating her food. And I open up the cage or open up the back of the hutch. And there they are. Four furless, eyeballs closed, squirmy little baby rabbits. And they're squirmy so much so that one of them falls out of the back of the hutch and lands in the snow. And it starts screaming.
And I was in it. So by in it, I mean that by age 16, I had signed a purity contract with God. Really, it was just a piece of paper that some guy in a church printed. But to me, it was from God, and I was signing it for him. So I took it very seriously, and I wore a purity ring.
Three storytellers share their true personal story on the theme, Be Careful What You Wish For. Their stories were recorded live in person on April 4th, 2025, at the Covalite Theater in Butte, Montana. We gathered then on the traditional and unceded lands of the Salish, Kootenai, and Ponderay and Assiniboine peoples, whose ancestors have cared for and been stewards of this land for countless generations. We recognize the deep history, culture, and resilience of the indigenous peoples who lived here long before European settlers arrived. These tribes have been integral to the land, water, and ecosystem of the region, sustaining it through generations of careful stewardship. As we honor their enduring presence, we must also acknowledge the injustices that have been done to these communities, displacement, broken treaties, and the ongoing impacts of colonization, including damage done to the earth. This acknowledgement is a reminder of our responsibility to honor and support indigenous communities. One way that we can do this is to support organizations like the Butte Native Wellness Center, the North American Indian Alliance, and get cultural and historical insights at places like the Butte Cultural Heritage Center. Remember this, Tell Us Something stories sometimes have adult themes. Storytellers sometimes use adult language. Please take care of yourselves. Our first story comes to us from Needham Maddox. A determined single mom navigates the challenges of working four jobs and trying to buy her dream business, a local video store. Amidst this chaotic life, a quirky encounter with an unexpected suitor leads to a surprising turn of events. Just as everything seems to fall into place, a sudden, life-altering incident challenges her newfound stability and reshapes her entire world. Nita calls her story Perfect Blue House. Thanks for listening.
So this is also a coming out story. No, it's not. But maybe it will be. When I was 25, my daughter was two, and there were two things that we did almost every day. One was we walked from our little studio apartment on Hickory down Beckwith up to the University of Montana, where she went to daycare and I took classes. And along the way, it started with like low-income neighborhood into more middle of the road and then the big fancy mansions around the university. And midway there was a perfect blue Victorian house, big green lawn, white picket fence, oak tree with a swing, and somewhere along the way we started calling it our house and imagining the life we would lead in it that seemed so far away from the little studio apartment we were living in. And then on the way home, we would always stop at the Crystal Video Store. And I actually recognize there might be people in the audience who have no idea what a video store is. And when they're done right, they are amazing places, and the Crystal was one of the best of them. Everybody who worked there was a writer or a musician or an artist, and they knew everything about Peter Greenaway's use of tableau vivant or Kurosawa's use of Lone Wolf. And there was all these like fabulous shelves just full of other worlds, worlds that just expanded what I could imagine in my sometimes feeling a little bit claustrophobic life at that point. 7 years later, my daughter is 9, there's now a 6-year-old brother. I've spent 2 years working in a corporate environment that just didn't really suit me. We moved back to Missoula, and I'm working 4 jobs to make ends meet and try not to touch into my savings. But one of those jobs is I'm working at the Crystal Video Store now. And the owner would very much like to sell the Crystal Video Store and asked me if I want to buy it. And so I was trying to put together the resources to buy the video store. Now, one evening, I'm working there, and this guy comes in, and I've known him for a while. And I found him kind of interesting, which was intriguing because he wasn't really my type. My type was like dark, brooding musician, and he was kind of tall and blonde, cleft chin, sort of the captain of the football team archetype. And he had met me probably 5 times prior to that, and he never seemed to remember me. So I kind of was like, I don't know what I think about this guy. And he walks up, and he's got this completely unredeemable action adventure movie. And I pull up his account, and it's just bad movie choices. And $50 in late fees, and he tries to introduce himself again. And I was like, listen, buddy, you have terrible taste in movies. You owe $50. You're going to need to pay us $20 of those late fees. Take your crappy movie and kick rocks. And that was it. He tried to court me for months. And I was a single mom trying to buy a business, working 4 jobs, and I had no time for this character. But then he kind of got me, and he was like, listen, I just bought this house. Come over. I'll make you dinner. You can bring any movie you want. And I show up at the address at the perfect blue Victorian with the green lawn and the white picket fence and the tree with the swing. And I notice, oh, this is a little wink from fate here, huh? Okay. So we embarked on about 3 months of a very romantic adventure, and he was surprisingly great about dating a single mom who is working a lot and trying to buy a business. And then the day came where I signed the papers and put down a ton of money, and I now owned this business that I had really wanted to have. And my daughter and son and I were crossing the street on Higgins in Missoula to go get ice cream at the Big Dipper to celebrate, and we were run over by a truck in the intersection. And I'm never going to forget the feeling of grabbing for my daughter's jacket, and she was just gone. My mind couldn't even comprehend where had she gone. And I looked down at my 6-year-old. His head was right by the bumper of the truck, and I grabbed him and threw him over my head to the sidewalk just as I noticed this crushing feeling as the tire rolled across my foot. And my daughter spent 3 months in the hospital. And the most of that next year in a wheelchair, she had 7 different surgeries, 1 to reconstruct her face. And during that early phase, that steep uphill climb about learning how to run a business, I was pretty much every day in the hospital. And I had just bought a video store right at the beginning of Netflix being a thing. So when we kind of normalize when she comes out of the hospital, there's just so much stress, and the only thing I can really remove from the stress is to break up with the guy. And he says, you know what, you should just move in with me. That's going to make things easier. Which seemed like a good idea other than the fact that we'd only been dating for about 6 months. But we move in to the perfect blue Victorian. So we're in our house, and I own the business I've always wanted to own. And things are normalizing a little bit, but I'm also noticing that I'm really tired and kind of run down, probably just stress. So I go in for a checkup. And then the day before my 33rd birthday, I took my daughter to what was going to be her last doctor's appointment, and this chapter of her life was going to end. We were going to schedule the very last surgery. And it was really disappointing because they said some things weren't healing correctly and she was going to need another couple of surgeries. And she was pretty bummed. I said, listen, I've got a doctor's appointment. You can come, like a follow-up appointment. You can come with me to that and then we'll go do something fun. So she came with me, and I remember being in the waiting room, and we had the funny little pillow in the exam room, and she was chasing me around in her wheelchair, hitting me with this pillow. We were laughing, and I was like, oh, this is so fun. And then the doctor came in and said that I was going to have another series of tests because it looked like I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which I did. And that whole dream that out of nowhere I had manifested began to dissolve. And I sold the business eventually so it wouldn't get caught up in the medical bankruptcy, and it was a lot of pressure on the relationship, and it ended, and we moved out of the perfect blue Victorian. Now, this story might sound like it's a tragic story, but actually, in the end, which there isn't an ending yet, it didn't end. All those people are still alive. And to be honest, I was getting some feedback about the story, and somebody said, wow, it was so interesting. You were just telling a story, and then all of a sudden you get hit by a truck. But that's the way it works. That's how trauma works. One day you're leading one life, and the next, that life is never there again. You're leading a completely different life. It was this rapid reset where we were in this very sweet, normal life, and then this giant heroine's journey for both my daughter and I started. And neither of us has led anything close to a normal life. We have led a very wild, creative, yes, full of some more trauma. Yes, the trauma from that still follows us, but amazing resiliency and an incredible lust for life was found in that moment. So that's the story I'm telling, and that's the story I'm sticking with.
Thanks, Nita. Nita Maddox is a multi-generational Montanan, born and raised in Whitefish. She has a passion for adventure, even if it is finding something exciting in the produce area at the grocery store. Nita is here on this planet to be seriously playful on the journey. Next up is Joyce Gibbs. As a third grader in Montana, Joyce convinces her parents to get pet rabbits, only to discover their true intention is to breed them for food. Despite an early mishap with the first litter, she learns the harsh realities of farm life. This unique upbringing shapes her understanding of where food comes from, leading to a memorable, albeit somewhat grisly, childhood experience. Joyce calls her story Stew and Pot. Thanks for listening.
Third grade, Clinton, Montana, 16 miles east of Missoula. You know, in third grade when, you know, we had a pet rabbit. So in the back of the classroom is Peter. Peter's in his little cage, and it's our job to water him and feed him and clean out his cage every once in a while. That was super fun. And my friend Dina, in third grade, I went over to her house one day, and she had like 20 pet rabbits. And I was like, oh, you can do this at home too? They had chickens and goats probably and pigs, you know, but and so I go home and I'm like, Mom, Dad, I think I want a pet rabbit. And my dad says, well, okay. Actually, you can have a pet rabbit. You can have two pet rabbits. We're going to get a male one and a female one. And we're going to breed them. And we're going to eat their young. I'm like, yep. Which is fine, you know. My dad was a hunter, So I wasn't able to like help him cut up the meat in third grade, but we definitely were like wrapping in butcher paper, and I knew where my meat came from. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like a good thing. I can do that. So we go to Dina's house. Dina's dad has a super cool hutch that he made that has three different compartments. And it stands off the ground and for the critters, you know, who might eat the rabbits. But each compartment has a nesting area in the back, and then a front door and a back door, and then they have these side doors, so you can open up those side doors so the rabbits can commingle. And so we get the hutch, and we go to the store, and we get these rabbits. One's white, and one's black, and they were short hair, and, you know, they're little rabbit size. We got a book on how to raise rabbits, and we take them home. And we put them each in their separate compartments. And then about a week later, we open up those doors so they could commingle. And they, a couple weeks later, my dad's like, I don't really think anything's happening here. I'm like, okay. So we go talk to Dina's dad again, because he's got, you know, 20 rabbits. He says, oh, yeah, Dina's dad says, oh, yeah, those store-bought rabbits, they don't really sometimes do that. But I've got a really good breeding doe. Rabbits are called does and bucks. So I got a good breeding doe for you. And we get this rabbit. She's got long hair and lop ears, which are the ones that fall down. And she's this big. And we're going to call her Stella. I forgot to mention. My dad said, you know, it's probably not a good idea to name your rabbits. But just, you know, we should. So we'll call the white one Stew, and we'll call the black one Pot. So then we have Stew and Pot and Stella. Thankfully, it was a, you know, triplex. So we get them all commingling together. Because part of the book had, like, drawings of how you could tell male and female, but I could never figure out actually what that drawing meant, so we just let them all in there. And a couple weeks later, my dad's like, yeah, I think something's happening here. So we figure out that Stella's pregnant, and I'm super excited. And it's sometime in the winter. One day I'm supposed to, or every day I go out and I feed the rabbits, and I their water always freezes over, so I have to like take it in and thaw it out and give them fresh water in the morning. So I'm doing that, and I notice that Stella isn't coming out of the nest. And I finally like bring the food out and the water out and get her to kind of come out of the nest. And so I run around to the back where the nesting area is while she's eating her food, and I open up the cage, or open up the back of the hutch, and there they are. Four furless, eyeballs closed, squirmy little baby rabbits. And they're squirmy so much so that one of them falls out of the back of the hutch and lands in the snow. And it starts screaming. And so I pick it up and I throw it back in the nest, and I shut the door, and I lock it, and I go to school. And I say, hey, my rabbit had babies. Hey, did you hear? My rabbit had babies. And I go home, and like Stella's hanging out in the cage, and I'm like, cool. I'll go back there and see. And I open up the hutch and I open it up and there's no babies in the nest. And later on that night, I tell this to my parents and they say, yeah, you're a foreigner. You picked up her baby. You ruined the nest and she ate all her babies. Like, oh, yeah. So the next time Stella got pregnant, I was really patient. And after a couple weeks, those little babies came out of the nest into the front part of the hutch. And they were super cute and ran around. And I didn't name them. And about a month later, my dad said, yeah, it's probably time to harvest those rabbits. So we had two pine trees that grew pretty close to each other. And he put a board across, and he put some rope coming down from the board. And he said, bring me a bunny. And I brought the bunny in. And he tied him up from the legs. And he held him by the ears. And he cut off their heads. And he put it in a 5-gallon bucket. And then he gutted them. And then he skinned them. And then he handed me this piece of meat. And I brought it inside and I gave it to my mom. And she cleaned it and she wrapped it in butcher paper. And we had rabbit stew. And we walked the 5-gallon bucket up to the hill and dumped it out and left it for the coyotes. And we did this a couple times. And eventually one day, as we, like 6 months later, as we were coming down the hill with another empty bucket, I said, Dad, I don't think I want any more pet rabbits. Thank you.
Thanks, Joyce. Joyce Gibbs was raised in Missoula, Montana, tramping through the woods. She grew up to become an artist, builder, and tiler. She is a resilient, creative, and adventurous woman. After a brief stint in New York City and then New Orleans, she bought a dilapidated railroad house on Missoula's historic north side and spent the next 15 years remodeling it and making it her own. When she is not busy building beautiful spaces with her tile installations at Joyce of Tile, you can find her riding her motorcycle, gardening, and playing. Closing out this episode of the Tell Us Something podcast is Amanda Taylor. Amanda was raised in a devout Christian community and was committed to purity, vowing to save herself for marriage. This conviction was challenged when she moved to Switzerland and met a captivating man. A spontaneous trip to a luxurious hot spring with him leads to a pivotal moment of self-discovery, forcing her to confront her deeply held beliefs. Amanda calls her story Hallelujah. Thanks for listening.
I found my reverence for Jesus Christ in the town of Powell, Wyoming. It has about 6,000 people, some diners, and a lot of churches. And I found my community there at church, and it was my closest friends and the people that I was most connected to. And so I was, once I found them, I was locked into that lifestyle and I was in it. So by in it, I mean that by age 16, I had signed a purity contract with God. really, it was just a piece of paper that some guy in a church printed, but to me, it was from God and I was signing it for him. So I took it very seriously. And I wore a purity ring, which, if you don't know what any of this means, you're lucky. But also, It means that you are making an agreement with God that you will not have sex until you're married. It's a long time. And so I made that agreement, and I wrote letters to my future husband, and I collaged this box of like romantic pictures and Bible verses, and I meticulously folded these letters and put them in it. And I thought, you know, and when we get married, I'll give him this box of letters as though that's like something someone would want. And I also, I kept a prayer journal, and I wrote in it every day. And if I forgot a day, I would ask God to forgive me for forgetting a day. And then I would also ask at the end, please forgive me for any sins that I forgot about, just to always just making sure all my bases were covered so that I could end up in heaven with my friends. Luckily, I also had an insatiable desire to travel and see the world. So when I was 20, I signed an actual contract, you know, like one that actually mattered, to go to be an au pair in Switzerland. And an au pair is just a fancy word for a nanny or a person who cooks, cleans, and does all the chores and childcare for a very low price. And then you live with the people as well. So I moved to Switzerland to become a nanny. And I got there, and I was still like connected with church. Brought all my prayer journals. I was still on track for heaven. And within the neighborhoods there, like everyone knew that there was an American living in a house that was me. And whenever another neighbor had an American visiting, they would all like let each other know, and they'd be like, "Hey, we have an American. You should send your American down, and they can be Americans together." And so, about 8 months into my time there, we got a call. There was an American down the street at my friend's house, and I was like, "Yeah, I like friends. I'll go meet him." So then I went down the street, and there was this man named John. And John was 27. He was an architect who had quit his stressful New York City job and was backpacking around Europe. And he had shaggy hair, and he was funny. So, oh no. I loved him instantly. You know, all he had to do was say hi. And I was sold. And we had some casual conversation, and then he told me he was going to this really great hot springs in the Alps that weekend. And then he invited me, and I was like pinching myself. I was like, "Oh my God, is this actually happening? Am I going to give him the box of letters?" And so I agreed to go to the hot springs. You know, if he invited me to the moon, I would have gone. So we made a plan. I was going to go after work, and he would already be there. So the day comes, I get my backpack on and some cool outfit that I thought was cool at the time. Who knows what it was, but so I take the train and I get to this hot springs, and I walk in. And if you think of somewhere like Fairmont Hot Springs, you know, there's like children running around everywhere and a questionable amount of urine in the water and, you know, probably like wondering if you're going to get warts on your feet. It was not that. It was the opposite of that. It was like nestled into a mountainside, and I walked in, and there were vaulted ceilings, and live jazz is happening, and John is standing there drinking a glass of wine, and I stood there with my backpack on, quickly realizing that this is not a backpack kind of place. But luckily, John got me upstairs quickly. We got my backpack put away, and then we came back downstairs and enjoyed a night of jazz and conversation, and I just kept loving him. The next day, we soaked in the water, and it was the hot springs like all of the pools were made out of granite that was mined from the Alps. And there was a rose petal pool that just smelled like roses. And then there was a rain shower that was just like this beautiful room that just, it felt like it was raining. So yeah, basically like Fairmont, you know, almost, almost minus the slide. But so we soaked in there and chatted, and I don't know how you could not love someone after hanging out in a rose petal pool. But so we were hanging out in this pool, and he mentioned an ex-girlfriend, and I said, "Oh, I've never had a boyfriend." And he said, "What? You've never had a boyfriend?" And I was like, "No, why would I have a boyfriend?" And he was like, "What is happening?" And I was like, "Well, I've never been on a date." And he was like, "What?" I was 21 this time. So I suppose that was a little peculiar, but I was like, "No, I have never been on a date." I was like, "I'm with the Lord." Like, I don't go on dates. I got this box of letters. So he said, "All right, tonight we are going on a date." And I said, "Great." So we went out to this fancy restaurant that I could not have afforded by myself, for sure. And you know, my pants had like were like tattered at the bottom from stepping on them, and I could see around in the restaurant. No, everyone else had nice pants, so I just was like, "Oh, we gotta keep these under the table." So we had this 3-course meal, and then dinner wraps up, and we went back upstairs to our room, and I forgot to mention earlier, we were in the same room, but there were two twin beds, plenty of space for Jesus in between. So we have this beautiful dinner, full bellies. We go up to our separate beds, and we're just laying there in the dark, and I'm just smiling. And he goes, "Amanda," I'm like, "What?" He says, "I have a confession." And I'm like, "What?" He said, "When I invited you here, my plan was to hook up with you." And I was like, "Oh my gosh." And he was like, "But now after getting to know you and talking to you, I can't do that to you. You are so sweet and so innocent. I can't do that. But I just, like, you're a very attractive woman, and it's been wonderful to spend time with you." And I was like, and with all of my strength, I said, "Well, we could make out just a little." Just a little. A little make out. Never hurt anybody. And then he sat up out of his bed, and I pushed the twin beds together. And the next thing you know, we're making out. But then I remembered, Jesus is still here. And then two, I was like, I actually have no idea what to do after kissing. Like, I don't know what happens after that. I just know that I don't do that. But I don't even really know the logistics of it. So I said, "Stop, wait." I was like, I don't know what to do with that. I don't know what that is. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know. I've never looked one in the eyes. I don't know. And he was like, "What?" He said, "Okay, we are going to go on a journey of discovery." It's like, cool. And he said, "I'm just going to touch you, and you're going to say if you like it or not. And if you don't like it, I don't do it." And I was like, "Great. But what about you?" He said, "You're not touching me at all." I said, "Great." And then, you know, we kissed a little bit. I was like, "I like it." We kissed a lot. I was like, "Love it." And then there was, you know, some like touching of all the parts, and I still struggle to say the names of them, but it's fine because I'm just 38. So yeah, I was like, and then, and then he started kissing down my stomach. And I was like, okay, this is too far. This is too far. So I was like, stop, stop, stop. And he said, okay. And then we went to bed. You know, it was like the happiest sleep of my life. We woke up the next day and things kind of just started right where they left off. Thank you so much. And he starts kissing down my stomach, and I didn't have the heart to stop him. Like, I just couldn't. And so he went. And really, all I have to say about that is hallelujah. That is so satisfying in a church. I just want to do it one more time. Hallelujah! But, like all good things, it had to come to an end. And I had to get back to my life. He had to continue backpacking around Europe. And so we went our separate ways. I got on my train and he got on his. And, you know, I had little tears in my eyes as I sat down in my seat because now I really loved him. And I had about 4 hours of watching the Alps go by to think about it. And I could not reconcile the fact that now I was probably going to hell. I know. And I was like, but I'm a good person, but I'm going to hell. I couldn't reconcile that, and I couldn't make sense of that. So by the time I got off the train, I was walking up this hill to my house. I only knew two things at that point, and it was that I was not asking for forgiveness, and that all of that needed to happen again. That is all I have. Thank you so much for listening and for coming out.
Thanks, Amanda. Amanda Taylor resides in Missoula with her cat, Ted. As a child, she spent summers visiting her grandparents in Alder, Montana. Her earliest memory of Butte is her grandma taking her to the Butte Walmart and buying her a Reba McEntire poster. She no longer has the poster, but she still loves Reba McEntire. Thanks for listening to the Tell Us Something podcast. Remember that the next Tell Us Something event is October 7th. The theme is Walk on the Wild Side. You can pitch your story by calling 406-203-4683. Learn more and get your tickets at tellussomething.org. Coming up on the next episode of the Tell Us Something podcast.
That was the first thought, I have gonorrhea. The second immediate thought was the place I need to go to treat this gonorrhea is my first day at the health department. I thought, oh my God, this is going to suck. I get dressed. For some reason, I decided to put on white underwear. To this day, I don't understand why I chose white.
And I probably should have figured it out, but I didn't. And I came out of surgery with my right leg 1.5 inches shorter than my left. And I was PO'd, to say the least. And the doctor said, well, that's the way it has to be. So it just was. So I just learned to use poles for hiking, and I put lifts in and outside of my shoe, and I got a lot of body work.
When I found his body, I just started screaming and screaming and ran into the house, grabbed the phone, and started dialing my parents in Illinois. When I realized I can't just keep screaming when they answer the phone, and I can't stop, I hung up.
I asked him if he wanted to open up, and he jumped at it. He was thrilled, and that was shocking to me and also terrifying. And I wish that maybe I had been a bit more terrified, because I spent about 2 years fielding a lot of text messages asking if it was okay that he had sent pictures to them. And I lost my mind. I was sad. 3 kids and a husband, second one, and I didn't have what I was realizing I needed.
Listen to the stories from the June 2025 live event that closed out Pride Month. The theme was Lost and Found. Subscribe to the podcast so you'll be sure to catch it on the next Tell Us Something podcast. Thanks for listening to the Tell Us Something podcast. Coming up on the next episode of the Tell Us Something podcast. Listen to the stories from our return to Butte, America in April of 2025 on the next episode of the Tell Us Something podcast. Subscribe to the podcast so you'll be sure to catch these stories on the next Tell Us Something podcast. Remember that the next Tell Us Something event is October 7th. The theme is Walk on the Wild Side. You can pitch your story by calling 406-203-4683. Learn more and get your tickets at tellussomething.org.